Hello and welcome to episode 3 of Office 365 Exposed, recorded on location in Aliso Viejo at the headquarters of Enow Software, who we're fortunate to have sponsoring this episode. I'm Paul Robichaux, and with me is the Irish sensation, Mr. Tony Redmond. Hello, Tony.
Oh my gosh, that's a terrible introduction. I'll take it, because I'm old and grumpy and sometimes need to have my ego confirmed.
Tony is still drinking his coffee, so he's not quite up to full speed this morning.
That's true. So what are we going to talk about?
Boy, we've got a lot to talk about. There's always something happening.
That's right.
Which is one of the things that makes this industry so interesting and so challenging. One of the big news items that's been on people's minds recently is the change in the way that Microsoft requires you to be recertified for their learning credentials.
Right.
Let's talk about that a little bit, because I know that's generated quite a bit of discussion in the Exchange community, at least.
Yeah, I think that, so Microsoft Learning, I'm not sure what they are actually measured on. I have a suspicion that they're measured on quantity rather than quality.
And that
so what that means is that they want to have as many people as possible having some Microsoft certification. So in the case of MCSE messaging, which is the certification that most Exchange folks would have, including those who work with Office 365, so it would be Exchange Online, there is a recertification program. And that recertification program requires people to use the Microsoft Virtual Academy. Now, the Virtual Academy, I like a lot. I think there's a lot of good stuff on it. There's stuff that's being recorded by subject matter experts. A lot of the program managers who are responsible for the development of individual topics within Exchange or SharePoint or other products, they get up there and they share the knowledge. PFEs, the guys who actually have to support the most complex cases that come into Microsoft support, those guys are doing it as well. And, you know, you see an occasional MVP pop up. So that's all great. However, my real big difficulty, and I guess I've gone public with this, so there's no secrets here, if you will. My difficulty is where you use outdated content that is littered with errors, where there is no evidence that there's any quality control or updates. Where you take that material and you use it as the basis of recertification. I just have a real big difficulty, because I think the outcome, and this is genuine, the outcome is that you could literally sit down, watch a set of videos, and click your way through some assessments, which are based, one example is my favorite one, I guess, is here are 4 answers. Pick 4 answers and get this right. Hold on a minute. My dog could get that answer right.
Well, so just to make sure that I understand what we're talking about, my general perception of the MVA content has been that the content itself is very good. And I know Microsoft, they gather that content from a number of sources. Sometimes it's originally produced for internal consumption. Yep. Microsoft uses it internally for a while. And then when the product that it talks about has reached a certain stage in its life, they release it publicly. But it sounds like what's happened with the MVA recertification efforts in particular is that someone somewhere, not necessarily the product teams, has been responsible for writing some questions that wrap around this content.
I have no idea. I mean,
that process is pretty opaque, right? I mean,
MSL does what MSL wants, and they just produce these programs. And again, I have no problem with MVA, with the Microsoft Virtual Academy. I have no problem with that, because the content is generally quite interesting. But you can't simply go to your back catalog of videos and assemble a random set that seem to, belong together and say, this is the basis of our recertification effort, especially when some of the material is now almost 3 years old.
Now, can we agree in principle that it's good to have a route for recertification so that people are required to do something to keep their skills fresh?
I'll agree that recertification is a good thing. Yes.
Okay.
But it's got to be a high quality program. It's got to be based on accurate and up to date information. and it's got to be conducted in such a way that you can have faith in the outcome. I have zero faith. Zero. Less than zero faith. Can I go less than zero faith in the results that are produced by this particular exercise? I think that anybody who looks at somebody, look, if you've been recertified, fair play to you. But as an executive, looking at somebody coming in who purports to be an expert in any technology and is using this certification as testament to their qualities, I'd say, you know what? That's not true.
So we've gone from having paper MCSEs to video MCSEs. Essentially, we have people who can recertify.
We have YouTube MCSEs here.
Okay, excellent. I like that term. So essentially, what we're faced with is a lack of a way to tell whether someone who has gone through this recertification process actually understands the material, because just having that credential and showing that they've been recertified doesn't indicate.
Yeah, it's laughable. This is laughable. It's so bad that I wonder who thought this was a good idea and who still thinks it's a good idea within Microsoft Learning. I really do, because those people should be accountable for producing high quality programs, and this is absolutely not a high quality program. But anyway, we probably spent too much time on that. Had a little rant to start.
We love you, Microsoft Learning. Don't change a thing. Oh, no, wait.
No.
Okay, so moving along, you know, one of the questions that raises, for a long while, if you wanted to get any kind of technical training or technical knowledge about Microsoft products, really your routes were very limited. You could install the products yourself and work with them directly, which I still think is by far the best way to gain that knowledge.
Yep.
You could do Microsoft official curriculum courses. So MVA is a really valuable addition to that along the way. But there's so many different technologies that people are expected to or desire to master. MVA can't possibly cover all of them. So that raises a question. Okay, suppose that you want to get training in a particular technology or a particular platform. Mm. How do you do it? What's the route?
So let's just roll back a minute and say that the old way of training, I think, favored quality, because you could invest the time into doing a real deep dive into a technology that you knew was going to be around for a couple of years. I mean, when you and I did the Exchange 2010 Maestro program, and we had fun, you know, going around the United States delivering sessions in places like Anaheim and getting the opportunity to go to Disneyland, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We could spend literally 4 months beforehand really going deep dive into Exchange 2010, understanding all the bits and bytes, creating the slide and prepare and delivering. That was a whole lot of fun. However, I think two very big changes are happening. The first is that technology changes at an awesomely rapid rate right now.
True.
Okay. So it's kind of hard to keep up to date. It's hard to keep training materials up to date. And it's hard to keep training materials at a consistent and accurate and insightful level. So that's the first problem. The second problem is that, and this is more so for the cloud, is that where people used to specialize in a single technology or maybe associated technologies, they're now being asked to cover a far bigger set of technologies, because you take Office 365. You know, if you approach Office 365 with just the attitude of, well, we're doing Exchange, we're going to move mailboxes across and that'll be happiness and light, and, you know, the world will continue thereafter. That's such a short-sighted and bad attitude to have. I hope nobody has it, but I've seen it in practice. And the reason why it is because, firstly, you're paying for full Office 365 licenses, unless you buy just the Exchange Online plans. But in this case, let's say you're buying Office 365. And secondly, there's a whole heap of value to be extracted for the business from a more holistic view of Office 365. So that means that folks have got to know Exchange, clearly, but they've got to expand into SharePoint. They've got to understand what OneDrive for Business is all about. They may want to have a look at the Office 365 video portal. They might have to do a delve into Delve analytics.
Well played.
Yeah, there you go. That was just serendipitous. And they might have to look at Yammer. They might have to look at Office 365 Planner and Office 365 Groups. And they might even have to look at Sway. And these are all apps that are available right now in the box in Office 365. So that's good. That's a breath to think. But the next thing is that all of these apps are changing all of the time.
Exactly.
So the problem, as I say, is that you've got this rapid cadence of change and you've got an increasing breadth of knowledge that's required. So this makes it difficult.
So Microsoft's solution is to try to jam as much training as possible into mega events like Ignite.
Yeah, right? Which is coming up about 14 weeks away. 15.
Yeah, we were talking about it before the show, and 14 weeks seems like a long time away, but it's 14, really not.
15 weeks, whatever.
You know, it's essentially a quarter.
Yeah.
So we'll be recording another episode at Ignite, I would expect. But
right.
now is the time when people are starting to make plans and trying to decide whether their training budget supports going to Ignite, whether it's worthwhile, whether the content will, you know, the value of the content will make it justifiable. What do you think?
Well, first thing is that we know some detail about Ignite. We know that there's going to be a lot of people there. I think it's 22,000 or something like that. So it's going to be a bit like a bear garden. We also know we know a little bit about what the session catalog might look like. I mean, Microsoft are talking about 700 plus sessions, maybe more. However, Microsoft has not yet settled on the exact sessions that are going to be given at Ignite. I was on a telephone call yesterday a Skype for Business call yesterday with some of the marketing guys in Microsoft just to talk about sessions that might be in a particular area. And you know, they're still trying to figure things out. They're still trying to line up the right speakers. They're trying to make sure that they have the right coverage and new features. And I think, to be fair to them, they're also trying to make sure that they have the right depth of coverage at a practical and pragmatic level. So all of those things are in flight. However, I think it's fair to say that in the area Office 365, you're going to see a lot about SharePoint 2016 and its add-on effect or its subsequent influence over SharePoint Online. I think you'll see a lot about hybrid connectivity between on-premises SharePoint and SharePoint Online. I think you're going to see a lot about Office 365 groups. It got a lot of airtime last time around. And I think there's going to be a lot more because there are some changes there coming in terms of its interaction with SharePoint, especially with team sites. And of course, there's the ongoing question of what vehicle for collaboration am I going to use inside Office 365? Am I going to use the cockroaches of Exchange public folders? Am I going to use SharePoint team sites? Am I going to use Office 365 groups? Am I going to use plain old-fashioned distribution lists? Or am I going to use Yammer? And, you know, all of those type of things have got to be teased out.
And as a practical matter, what's going to happen at most companies is that different groups or different teams will use whatever they feel is appropriate. And so at the, you know, the corporate level, you'll see all of those being used simultaneously. And that creates
I think that's fair. And that speaks then to the issue of the difficulty people have of just understanding what are the strengths and weaknesses of each one of these collaboration methods. You know, if I was approaching it from a document management perspective, SharePoint is the obvious answer. If I'm looking at large-scale, company-wide, open forum kind of discussions, then Yammer seems like a good choice. If I'm looking for team-based, drive a particular topic forward, then Office 365 Groups seems fantastic. If I'm looking at just getting the mail out, distribution lists can't be beaten. So there's lots of different ways to skin this particular animal, and I think Microsoft will be trying their best to talk about that. I think too, then there's the topic of what are they going to be able to say about Exchange for on-prem customers. Last year they were able to talk about the upcoming release of Exchange 2016,
right,
and they were able to open the kimono a little bit just for people so they could get an early sight into what they're doing. And this year, you know, what can they report? We've got a cumulative update coming.
Always exciting news.
The cumulative update is good. they'll probably talk about, you know, support for Windows Server 2016. I think they'll probably talk about, we'll probably hear about virtualization again, because everybody will seem to.
Well, that topic never gets old. But I think you're right. It's hard to, absent some major announcement of something really exciting.
Yes.
Which has been very cleverly concealed from the MVP community so far.
Yes.
It's hard to imagine what Microsoft might talk about, which highlights something interesting about Ignite.
What's that?
Now that Microsoft has moved away from having separate product-specific conferences, Ignite is both their forum to make big announcements when they have them.
Yes.
But also their forum to disseminate technical knowledge, and also their forum to dispense Kool-Aid. So this is both good and bad, at least for those first two categories, I think.
Yeah, Kool-Aid meaning the roadmap.
Well, the roadmap and...
And the marketing messages that go are associated with the roadmap. Yeah, and that's absolutely true. They are going to have a mixture of sessions. And I don't mind that so much because, well, I at least find it interesting to go into a roadmap and hear the kind of messages that Microsoft is trying to pass to the tech community.
Well, not just a roadmap, right? I mean, clearly for a new technology such as SharePoint 2016, right? Yeah. Microsoft has got, they've focused a large amount of investment on it. If you talk to people who are more knowledgeable about SharePoint market dynamics, SharePoint and Office 365 MVPs, for example, they have a lot of opinions about what Microsoft is doing around the cloud search appliance and some of the other technologies that they're putting into there. So just from a roadmap perspective, I would say, yes, most customers want to know what Microsoft's plans are and why they're doing what they're doing. But I also think it's fair to say that, you know, a fair amount of material that we see at Ignite is really promotional material, if you will. It's Microsoft evangelizing why their technical approach is good and why you should adopt it. Why would you use Hyper-V versus VMware, for example? Why would you use Azure versus Google or AWS?
And there's all sorts of interesting nuggets buried in things like keynotes and roadmap sessions. One example of that, I think, is the famous Julia White demo from Ignite 2015, where she talked about how Delve was going to facilitate a work-life balance.
Right.
Remember that?
I do.
Now, that product has subsequently shipped as Delve Analytics, and what's interesting is that the vision that Julia laid out there is very different what is actually being delivered today. But what is delivered today is practicality rather than the vision. Now, the vision will eventually get there once they solve some privacy issues, once they solve they come up with solutions for how to anonymize data in such a way so that a single employee can't be compared to another employee in terms of productivity and after hours work and how much email somebody processes in a day and how many documents they work on and all the rest of it. But the point is that if you look at these keynotes and you look at these roadmaps, I think once you strip away the Kool-Aid, you do get these nuggets of information that tell you where they're putting their engineering dollars, where they're putting the focus areas, where they're trying to make a difference. And that is kind of interesting. But coming back to the mixture, yes, there is going to be a mixture of those type of sessions. There's going to be a mixture of deep dives from the likes of Ross Smith and those type of guys, which are always interesting. And then there will be, I hope there's going to be opportunities for interaction. You know, the kind of open mic sessions where you get a group of experts on the stage and it's your opportunity to ask them the most weird and wonderful question you've got from your environment and see how they squirm. That's always a bit of entertainment, and I quite like that.
I enjoy those very much, both as an attendee and when I have the opportunity to present. And I think it was interesting when Microsoft announced Ignite that Julia in particular promised that they would take the best of the community elements from the Link conference, SharePoint conference, and Mac and blend them into Ignite. And I think those panel sessions are one of the very best things that Ignite has done.
I agree. And it does give people the opportunity to mix and match with MVPs, with Microsoft engineers, and so forth and so on, and just have a great old time. Now, it's worth saying, though, that as we approach the conference season, there are going to be other conferences.
There are. You know, Ignite is big, and it's Microsoft-centric, and it's Microsoft-controlled. I don't want to liken it to the party Congress But there certainly is a heavy emphasis on themes mm-hmm. that Microsoft drives around their presentations. And that's not always to everyone's liking. Sometimes it's good to get a more independent perspective.
Mm. Yeah, and so 3 weeks after Ignite, on the other side of the country, in good old Las Vegas, there's IT Dev Connections. And one other thing, I mean, clearly both you and I have been associated with IT Dev Connections for many years. We've appeared at many conferences and enjoyed ourselves. It's a much smaller conference, much tighter, much more intimate.
Yes.
And it's kind of interesting this year that the conference organizers are very deliberately positioning it as the anti-Kool-Aid conference. It's the conference where, well, you listen to all that Ignite stuff, and now come to us and we'll tell you what's true.
We'll tell you what's really happening. Right, criminology.
Yeah. Do you think that Microsoft is squeezing the oxygen out of the room when it comes to independent conferences like IT Dev Connections? Or do you think there is room to position yourself as the antidote to Ignite?
Yes and yes. So yes, I think Microsoft is squeezing the oxygen out, but it's not entirely their fault. If you think back to the way things were 4 or 5 years ago, and then you look at the landscape today, there are many more virtual events. Yep. There are many more locally focused or technology focused events. For example, the SharePoint launch earlier this month on May 4th was an example of something that normally Microsoft might have held a large physical in-person event for.
Yes.
They are moving away from that and consolidating their resources, putting more wood behind the one arrowhead of Ignite. And that's both good and bad. So there are fewer Microsoft resources being dedicated to there are fewer Microsoft-sponsored or organized conferences, which means that on the Microsoft side, in terms of providing speakers and providing content and providing marketing horsepower, that's all being concentrated. On the third-party side, we've seen a number of independent conferences pop up and go away. IT Dev Connections is
persistent,
very persistent, and has weathered and lasted, whereas a number of smaller, more regionalized conferences haven't.
I think one of the reasons, by the way, that IT Dev Connections has persisted is because there's a good bunch of folks that actually come to that conference every year and use it as they build their year around it.
Yes,
we see them year after year after year. It's just great. And they come in, and what's not so great is that if you answered a question last year and you got it wrong, you will be reminded at the next IT Dev Connections.
This is true.
I mean, this is, but I can certainly.
I think of IT Dev Connections as much more a boutique conference or an insider's conference. And when I say that, I mean primarily we have a pretty stable group of extremely knowledgeable, extremely experienced speakers who tend to repeat.
Yes.
Which I think is good. I think there's a lot to be said for that kind of stability and continuity. As you said, we have a lot of...
As long as they come up with new jokes every year.
Well, I can't promise that.
Yeah, but that's the criteria. It's absolutely mandatory now. You can't be expecting to come to Vegas every year and do the roadshow based on
I'm going to have to submit an audition reel. Is that what I'm hearing? In addition to a session,
I think we need to have a guarantee that you've got some.
All right. Material. Well, it's time for me to fire my existing writers then and get
there
some new ones.
But where are you going with it? You think that there still is a niche for these guys?
I think there absolutely is because there are topics that Microsoft, even at a very large conference like Ignite, and I'm going to make this number up, but let's say that there are 750. Speaking slots available during Ignite. Microsoft as a whole has got to divide that up across the entire breadth of their product line from Azure Active Directory at the A's to whatever the corresponding Z product is. And every one of those product groups is fighting for as much airtime and as much attention and as many slots as they can get.
Right.
And so given that, the slice or the share of slots that Office 365 or that Exchange or that Skype will get are necessarily going to be small.
Yep.
Whereas at something like IT Dev Connections, you certainly won't have 700 plus slots.
No.
You might only have 50 or 60.
But no, there'd be a lot more than that, I think. The early session catalog had 80 odd in it. I think there's another 120 to come.
Okay, so fair enough. So let's say, just for the sake of argument, let's say that there are 200 sessions spread across development, IT Pro, communication and collaboration tracks.
Yeah.
That still gives you a much higher percentage of things that are likely to be hits.
Yes, because I think some of the topics that Microsoft has to cover because they have an engineering group in the space is just not interesting to the target audience that IT Dev Connections goes after. But anyhow, so the point is that the conference season is coming. Everybody should stay tuned and have a look at those session catalogs when they come online and figure out what's right for you. And maybe you'd like to go to Hotlanta in September, or maybe you'd like to go to even hotter Vegas in October. And I guess both of us will be at both of those conferences, so we look forward to meeting people.
Yes,
there.
And I'm personally just thankful that neither of those conferences are in Orlando this year. Yeah. I'm counting my blessings where I can find them.
Yeah.
So, speaking of blessings, or speaking of counting, maybe one of the things that we see Microsoft continuing to do in Office 365 is push into areas that were once reserved exclusively for ISVs.
Yep.
You and I have talked some about archiving as being a primary example there, where Microsoft for a long while had no archiving. Then they had journaling capability. Then they added some archiving. They've continued to build on their archiving and compliance and hold and retention technologies. What do you think is happening in that space? Is Microsoft going to eat all the mashed potatoes there and not leave anybody for their ISV partners? Is that a dying space?
Well, it's like many of these areas of technology within Exchange, SharePoint, or Office 365. As Microsoft expands its base capabilities, the ISVs that are in a particular space have got to figure out how they can continue to add value. If you take archiving, why do people archive? Well, they archive because they had to do it to be able to capture copies of messages or documents or whatever with all the metadata intact and be able to retain them for legal inspection. That need started to go away once Exchange 2010 came out, and you had things like archive mailboxes for long-term storage. You had really sophisticated e-discovery searches based on the Search Foundation, and so forth and so on. The need has continued to go away as Microsoft has introduced changes such as including the full expanded distribution list of recipients in message headers. That came along a couple of years ago. That was a thing that they never wanted to do in the past because it increased the size, the average message size.
Right.
But once you had much more capable networks, once you had as much storage as you could eat, it didn't really matter what the size of a message was. So that's the reason why that happened. They've also brought in other technical initiatives such as the ever-expanding archive, an archive mailbox that expands in 50 gig chunks to accommodate as much stuff as you want to archive, and some of the really impressive stuff that they're doing on the search side.
Yes.
Content searches, for example, in Office 365 are not limited to the kind of hardware constraints that you have in a single server Exchange environment. If you go and perform a discovery search in Exchange, what's that hardware that you got available? Well, that's what you're gonna use. Inside the cloud, of course, there is this fabric of available servers that are just waiting to do stuff for you. And I've been doing some really deep dives with some of the guys working on compliance, specifically in this space. And some of the data I've seen, being able to search 200 million mailboxes in a single search, being able to deal with hundreds of millions of documents and items returned by a search, that's pretty phenomenal. That's the kind of scale that's now there. And then, of course, their purchase of Aquivo and the Aquivo Zoom technology in late 2014 brought them this capability of saying, well, I have all this big amount of data that I've recovered, I now need to strip out all the messages sent to Auntie Mabel about her jam recipe and get to the real stuff. So the point is that Microsoft is in a journey in a number of these areas where they continually improve and add new functionality and add new scalability. And that is steadily removing the reasons why you want to have a third-party product in this space. Now, there's still room for a third-party product. For example, some people don't like all their ducks in one basket. So therefore, it makes sense to have a copy somewhere else on another cloud service, for example. Some people, some ISVs, are very, very good at dealing with the needs of a particular industry. They might serve legal investigators much better than Microsoft can.
Right.
and so forth and so on. But the point is, I think, in any one of the particular segments that you would care to look at, Microsoft is in that, is moving into these places, and you have to figure out whether or not you, the ISVs can stay ahead. Or another thing, of course, is that in some segments are just going to go away. For example, migration. If you were a company that depended on being the best damn migration software on the face of the planet, you could be very successful right now. But there's a limited runway ahead, because eventually we're going to get to the point where there are no more mailboxes to
migrate. And in some ways, that's a special case just for migration, because the hallmark of a successful migration is that it's something you do once and then you never have to do it again. But I take your point that there are some areas where Microsoft has aggressively ramped up what they are capable of doing in Office 365.
Absolutely.
And it's been difficult for ISVs in those spaces. But I also think at the same time, there have been some spaces where Microsoft has made a play and has not seen that same degree of success. Message hygiene is one that comes to mind.
Yep.
Despite Microsoft's efforts with EOP, there are still many, many customers who want no part of it, and they insist on using on-prem appliances or other cloud-based services for their message hygiene, because there are various aspects of EOP that they don't like or don't think are suitable. And so Proofpoint and Ironport and Barracuda, these other companies that play in that space, are trying to exploit that advantage as best they can, and it looks like they're going to have some success in doing that.
Well, yes, and that's despite Microsoft adding new things all the time to EOP, which is interesting.
Oh, Advanced Threat Protection is a great example of something that they added that initially made a splash, but that maybe is not being uptaken as much as you might expect.
Yeah, and I think the reason is that these third parties that specialize in, especially in the appliance-based, they're really good at doing things fast, not slowing down the cleansing of the email stream. They're really, really good at it, and they're very focused on it, and they're very dedicated to it. So it's their business, and they take care of it very, very well. And there's no doubt, if you can code really tight and to be able to exploit dedicated hardware to do a particular task, you are going to be able to process things very, very, very quickly. And that's where I think they gain over the kind of general purpose approach that EOP is given. And EOP, you know, don't get me wrong, I think EOP is absolutely fine. I use it myself. But it's just that for other people, they may say, you know what, it's good to have a double dip here. I get EOP for free.
Might as well use it in that case.
I get it for free. But just before anything gets to EOP, I'll do another check. So that seems like a good thing. But it does point, you know, as I said at another meeting yesterday, I think we're now entering a period when there is going to be a big shakeout in the ISV market. Office 365 is proving to be a forcing function. ISVs don't have as much control over the technology, over the environments that they once had.
Right.
When on-premises software was the only game in town. Microsoft is moving into some areas that the ISVs had exclusive access to before. So I think there's going to be some consolidation over the next couple of years. I think there are going to be some ISVs that are going to run into trouble when they find out that their market has disappeared and they haven't come up with new products. And it's going to be very interesting to watch this space. I think it's going to be very, very interesting just to see how it goes. But, you know, I mean, you in your day job, You have to deal with this problem.
Absolutely.
Day in, day out.
I deal with it day in, day out, because we have a significant number of customers who are moving to the cloud, and they feel that with the tool set that Microsoft gives them right now, they don't have the same degree of visibility or ability to monitor what's going on. And they come to you now and say, hey, we want to be able to monitor the health of our cloud-based infrastructure. What can you do for us?
Right.
At any minute, Microsoft could decide that they wanted to dramatically ramp up their investment in those capabilities. Mm-hmm. But even though Microsoft is extremely large and extremely well-resourced, you know, the saying, you can do anything but you can't do everything, applies to them just as it does everywhere else. They have to choose where they're going to invest.
I think that's absolutely true, especially because Microsoft has got such a diverse set of tenants to actually deal with. I mean, the vast majority of Office 365 tenants are small to medium companies, and the small to medium companies are absolutely happy as Larry that they are getting much better reporting, much better visibility into the service health, much better visibility into problems as they are escalated and dealt with than they could ever have.
Yes.
If they stuffed in a couple of servers under a desk.
To the extent that they even look at those things in the first place, I suspect that if I could wave my magic wand and look at the analytics data that Microsoft has about feature usage, they probably have a very large percentage of customer tenants who never use the built-in reporting features because they're not interested. They're interested in, can I get my email? Can I occasionally share a document? Does Skype work?
I have pretty fundamental tests, actually.
Well, at the level you're talking about for customers that otherwise would be doing this self-deployed, self-managed infrastructure. You know, I think of the avionics shop I use, for example. They have about 20 employees. They work on airplanes. They're not IT people. They don't have any IT people. Anything that they get from Office 365 will be better than what they could provide for themselves.
Right. So I think for you guys, I think there is a space there. I think the
absolutely.
And perhaps there's a learning for ISVs insofar as the overall market that Office 365 occupies is probably not a happy hunting ground for ISVs. I think the happy hunting ground is the enterprise segment of that market.
I think that's probably true. You know, where I would expect to see ISVs breaking into the Office 365 broad market would be for things like add-ins.
Yes.
Or connectors that connect some line of business app or physical device into Office 365.
So people who are filling gaps in functionality.
Right. And some of those gaps Microsoft may fill. Some of them they probably won't. I mean, I wouldn't like to be the guys at Trello looking down the barrel of Office 365 Planner. But I don't think Microsoft is going to add CAD to Office 365, for example. I think the, CAD ISVs are probably relatively safe.
Yeah.
And add-ons that work around the margins of that market for things like dimensioning or finite element analysis or other things like that, that's probably a pretty safe space.
Yeah, Planner is actually a very interesting application because it's building on other components that are already there inside Office 365. And it's establishing the basis for maybe future integrations that only Microsoft can do, such as, for example, Planner to Project.
Yes.
Or even Outlook to Planner to Project. I mean, end-to-end, that would be pretty interesting.
We talked about this in the last episode, that Microsoft has 50 different ways to track your to-dos and the things that you're supposed to be working on, and that's not getting any better. You know, TFS, for example, has got an extensive set of tools for managing those tasks if you happen to be writing software. And there's Project, and there's Planner, and there's Wunderlist, and so on. So maybe in addition to the consolidation we're going to see in the ISV market, I think we're going to continue to see Microsoft try to consolidate down to a smaller number of technologies that do the same thing.
Yeah. So what else is happening? Let me see.
One other thing that I think is maybe interesting to mention. A couple of months ago, I wrote an article, or a series of articles for Windows IT Pro, talking about how people can climb the learning ladder to become cloud pros and move away from a focus of on-prem. I think ISVs face that same challenge in trying to decide, okay, how am I going to leverage the cloud? What do I have to do to be credible in the cloud? Where is the market in the cloud?
Yep.
And thinking of that, made me think of a recent news item that you and I haven't had a chance to talk much about, but I understand that you've parted ways with Windows IT Pro. What's going on there?
After 5 years of writing the Exchange Unwashed blog, I think it's fair could you say artistic differences?
Came. That's fair.
Windows IT Pro. I started writing, I think you did too, a long time ago for the magazine that was Windows NT News, or Windows New NT Magazine.
Windows NT Magazine with Mark Smith and his crew in Loveland, Colorado.
Exactly. And it was very wonderful. They were extremely professional editors. They paid a lot of attention to quality, and they forced authors to do their very best in terms of the content. Unfortunately, I think that there's a rush to mediocrity in many of the sites that are out there today, and I detected no great enthusiasm from Penton Media, the company behind Windows IT Pro, which is now trying to morph itself into IT Pro, to really become the best site on the planet in terms of its coverage, its analysis, and the insight that it could offer to readers about Office 365. I just did not see any way that that was going to happen. And really, I'm not into the kind of thing that I see, the kind of lazy journalism that I see out there in so many places, where Microsoft or some other company comes up with a press release, and, you know, 25 minutes later or an hour later, a press release has been recycled ad nauseum, and right down to vast quantities of text being lifted and just shoved into an article. And it's all about getting page views. But that really doesn't interest me, because those type of articles, they're fast, okay, but you can get them on the Microsoft site or the other site. They contain some content, but it's all lifted content. There is no insight, there is no analysis, there is no putting stuff into context, there is no attempt to criticize and to tell people what's important and what's not. And that just doesn't interest me. So if I had been able to conclude an agreement with the Pendant folks, some of whom I respect enormously, then I'd have been happy to stay, but that just didn't work out. So right now I'm enjoying taking a break from the daily thinking about what I'm going to write in the blog. We have the third edition of the Office 365 ebook coming out.
That's right around the corner.
We're actually renaming it. So instead of being Office 365 for Exchange Professionals, it's going to be Office 365 for IT Pros.
Good.
And that simply reflects the amount of non-Exchange content that's now in the book. I mean, it's become a massive effort, because we're at about 380,000 words. We're at about 700 PowerShell examples. We're at about 900 pages. And a lot of the new content that we've added in this edition is, as I said, non-Exchange. It's about SharePoint, it's about OneDrive, it's about Planner, it's about Delve Analytics. It's just been a huge project to try and bring together. So we're driving to conclusion on that, and we'll get that out the door. And then,
good.
Then we'll see what happens. I mean, I'm talking to some people, and we'll see what happens.
I know you'll stay busy.
Yes.
I have no doubt about that.
Yeah, the devil hates idle hands, or idle keyboards, or something like that, you know. So I know we'll get busy. I'm still going to publish things. I mean, today I was just chatting to one of the Microsoft guys, and they said, oh, we've just published our latest SLA stats, and, you know, for the Q1 of this calendar, Microsoft is reporting 99.98% performance against SLA for Office 365. Now, that's a golden example to have a moment of pause and some reflection about what that actually means and whether or not it's valuable. And you know, in a context where Microsoft is adding data centers in places like Germany and the UK and Canada, and is going to have to transfer tenants between those, the existing Office 365 data centers and the new data centers, just to get them in the right place, if you will, to serve a particular country market. That's the kind of thinking that I think should be available to people, and that's the kind of stuff I want to get into.
Always poking into those dark corners, aren't you?
Yes. I've never met a dark corner that I didn't want to have a little poke.
And on that note.
On that note.
Always a pleasure, Tony. I hope you have a safe trip back to Dublin, and you and I will be seeing each other again at Ignite in 15-ish weeks,
Whenever that is, yeah. And we will get back again.
We will. So thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you next time on Office 365 Exposed.
Thank you.